Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Tuesday, January the 31st. And welcome to our commentary. Well, if you live in North Texas, then you know that we're going through a little bit of a winter storm. We've had a little bit of ice and, you know, pretty much everything is shut down. The traffic is shut down. I think it's going to be this way today, Tuesday, and maybe a little bit of Wednesday. I think it's going to be normal again on Thursday, but this happens every year. As you know, if you live in this area, we always have 1 week every year like this. Well, I mentioned that this is the 31st of January, meaning our last commentary for the month of January of 2023. But I also mention it because a year from today, January, or the end of January 2024, we'll be following the New Hampshire primary. It'll be about this time a year from now. And obviously, Iowa usually comes before, or at least it used to. I know the Democrats are trying to rearrange their primary schedule, but as far as the GOP is concerned, I don't think anything has changed. You'll have Iowa and then New Hampshire shortly after. And of course, all of this is consequential because we're talking presidential politics. And on the GOP side, we know that President Trump has already announced that he's running. Governor DeSantis also. There's talk about Secretary Pompeo. I like him. There's talk of Vice President Pence. I've always liked Vice President Pence. There's talk of Secretary Nikki Haley. She was at the UN for President Trump. And there's probably going to be others. I think there's one of the nice things about the Republicans is they have quite a bench of candidates, including a lot of successful governors like Youngkin in Virginia, like Lee in Tennessee or Kentucky. I think it's Tennessee. Our own Governor Abbott here in Texas is also someone who I think will get some consideration for all of this. So there's a good base of a good bench, as they like to say, of candidates on the GOP side. On the Democrat side, I think it's all wide open. We hear about President Biden, whether he's going to run for re-election or not. I don't think he will, but, you know, he has proven me wrong before. But then, of course, there's also concern about Vice President Harris. There was an article that came out where some, you know, internal party people were having some thoughts about whether or not she would be a good candidate, you know, whether or not she'd be good on the ticket, let alone running for president. So everything is up in the air on the Democrat side. It's, you know, not exactly firm on the GOP side either, but all of this will focus, I think, a great deal more about a year from now when we actually move into the primary. So it's going to start really heating up. That's my prediction. It's going to start really heating up around August and September, because there's probably going to be a debate in August and September, a televised debate like the ones we've had before. And that's when I think you're going to see a lot of attention being paid to what's going to happen to President Trump. I also think that President Trump's political position could look a lot better. I think it's already looking a lot better than it was just a couple of months ago. I think this whole thing with documents, all these revelations about the FBI and Twitter, and so all of this stuff has made him look a little bit better. My suggestion to President Trump, if he's interested in running, he needs to lay low for a while. He needs to just basically back down for a while and let the Democrats have the stage. Let Vice President or let President Biden have the stage. Let the focus be on President Biden not on President Trump. Now, the media loves to have Trump into the mix, of course, because Trump is good business, good for business, I should say. But Trump should be, you know, smart enough to lay low for a while and just let President Biden have the stage for a few more months. So New Hampshire, 12 months from now, isn't that amazing how things fly? Well, I got a couple of posts at the American Thinker I want to mention. The first one is today, Tuesday morning, and it's violence against journalists around the world, but more specifically in Mexico. Mexico has become very, very dangerous for journalists. So far, 13 journalists have been killed in the last 12 months. That's about one a month, if you just think about that. And most of these journalists are killed, or the allegation is that they're being killed by criminal elements. It's not, you know, a personal problem or something with his wife or a friend or whatever. It's usually because these journalists are out there writing about corruption and they're writing about the criminal elements, and they're being killed for that reason. Just recently, there was an assassination attempt on the number one television guy in Mexico City. On the local television news, there was an assassination attempt against, I guess, their number one television personality there in Mexico City, and he survived. He was lucky, really, that his automobile was prepared, and the driver was able to drive, I guess, however he drove and avoided the bullets. But the truth is, they came very close to killing the number one television personality in Mexico just a few weeks ago. So it's a dangerous place to do business, and that's what my article is about. Mexico, aside from the fact that Mexico is very dangerous itself, with a number of murders happening everywhere. Of course, these murders don't get the publicity that a journalist does, but they're still people, and the numbers are just pounding and pounding in Mexico. It's just a very rough place to do business. As they say, I'm still fighting a little bit of allergies, so forgive me if once in a while I got to stop and, you know, just kind of check myself for the allergies. The other article that I have, and that was available, I think, Monday, and that's about the Canadian border. The U.S.-Canadian border is all of a sudden pretty active. You know, we've always had a very wide open border with Canada because, you know, it's a country where there's a lot of commerce and a lot of people going back and forth, and it's always been a very safe border. But here lately, it's still safe, but a lot of people are sneaking in. And what's happening is they're going to Canada, they get to Canada somehow, and then they come south, they cross the border. Now, it must be pretty dangerous to do so. I mean, it's dangerous in the south as well, but it must be pretty dangerous up in Canada because of the temperatures. I mean, you get into some of these January, February temperatures, and you're walking in the woods trying to get to the United States, it's got to be a pretty, you know, dangerous trajectory there. But I guess it's happening, and they've been capturing a lot more and more people trying to sneak in through the U.S.-Canadian border. And what's happening is, as I write in my article, is that when you don't have borders, you don't have borders. You know, when you project an image that you're not going to defend your borders, well, this is what happens. People will look for ways of penetrating your country through your borders. So, I mean, I think it's one of those things where I believe the United States is going to have to make a statement that, you know, we're going to defend our borders and we're going to protect our borders. And if we're not willing to do that, then this is what we're going to get. You know, we're going to get more and more people penetrating our borders. And at a time like this, and this is what worries me more than anything else, I'm not worried about, look, 99% of the people coming in are, you know, they may not be coming in legally, but they're not a threat. They're not a threat to the national security of the country, at least not directly. Excuse me for a second. Not directly. They're not a threat directly to the national security of the country. They may be, we may not have room for them. We may not be able to, you know, bring him into our society as quickly as we can, but they're not dangerous people. But it doesn't take more than, you know, a 10 or 12 people to come in an organized fashion, do some kind of a terrorist attack. And that's what worries me right now about what's happening on our borders, that our borders are supposed to be protected. And when they're not protected, the bad people are going to try to take advantage of your situation. And that's what I'm afraid is happening in the South and potentially in the northern part of the country. Well, this is a good day to celebrate some baseball birthdays. So let me just go through the list here. Happy number 76 to Nolan Ryan. I don't know of any, at least in my lifetime, certainly one of the greatest pitchers ever, Nolan Ryan. 5,000 strikeouts or 5,700 strikeouts, actually. Seven no-hitters. I mean, the guy was unbelievable. And I got lucky enough to watch several of his games in person and, of course, on television. So Nolan Ryan is 76 years old. He was born and still lives here in Texas. He's a rancher now. Ever since he stopped playing baseball, he became a rancher and a businessman. I think he's a banker as well. And he's just doing great. He looks great. So we wish him a very happy number 76. And we do remember a couple of the greatest baseball players and most consequential baseball players of the 20th century. Ernie Banks, who was born on this day in 1931. You know, a lot of people don't realize that he was born in Dallas, Texas. His career, of course, came with the Cubs in Chicago. That's what he's remembered for. But he was actually born here in Dallas, Texas. Ernie Banks, born on this day in 1931. He passed away in 2015. And Jackie Robinson, of course, the man who broke the color line in 1947 with the Dodgers. He was born on this day in 1919. He passed away at a young age in 1972. So three huge baseball players, members of the Hall of Fame, we remember on this day. I've got a post. I'm just going to quickly give you a heads up. I've got a post coming out Thursday morning, or Wednesday morning, I should say. I'm getting my dates a little bit mixed up because of the fact that we've had all this snowstorm. But I have a post coming out Wednesday on the debt limit and what I think the Republicans should do. I think they need to hold the line. I think they need to hold the line. They need to say no increase in the debt limit unless there are consequential reforms to spending. And you've got to take Social Security and Medicare off the table and defense off the table. And then you got to negotiate the rest. And if the Democrats are willing to have significant reforms, then you just, you know, you got to be ready for shutting down the government and you got to be ready for a plan B. And of course, plan B means that you would have to pay our responsibilities out of a special account or whatever. We're not going to default. I think that's a lie. We're not going to default. But we need to do something. And I think, as I write in my article, you'll see it Wednesday morning, it's now or never. We have to do something now. We cannot keep punting this problem to the next generation. It's got to be dealt with right now. We've got to do something about it now. We have a Republican majority in the House committed to this. There are 24 senators, Republican senators, in the Senate who've signed a letter to this effect. Now, 24 is not a majority, I understand that, but 24 will stop anything from happening because you got to have 60 votes. So I think this is the time to do it. This is the time to fight, and it's now or never, as I write in the article. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.